This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winston's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Is the Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live inside the PCB Man Cave on this Monday evening, and it is the Monday after WrestleMania 30, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about tonight. As you know, we don't usually get too much into the current product anymore here on this show. Scott and the crew handles that on the main events, but we will be chatting tonight because we're going to do a full recap of the Hall of Fame and WrestleMania. Let me first bring in my PIC, who was here last night. This is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. I was indeed in at the Chateau on Sopo, and we enjoyed a fine feast with some good people while watching WrestleMania 30 at the lovely Boneheads. We thank Matt and the guys and gals for a wonderful service. Mm-hmm. Our waitress was exceptional, and she was... rewarded in kind.
Yes,
at the end of the night.
I think she, behind Daniel Bryan, probably had the best night at WrestleMania.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a good time. You were here. Dr. G came up. Yep. Brad came mm-hmm. all the way up from Philly. We had Dan McGinn come down. We had mm-hmm. Andy and Roger and Roger's wife and my wife and daughter. So we had quite the crew at Boneheads.
Yes.
Of course, the ladies left around what 8:30, but we were there till the end. Mm-hmm. And lots of wings we took home. A lot of wing goodness.
Yes.
And a lot of
absolutely
fun.
Delicious.
It was a very
good fried pickles.
Yes, very good fried pickles. And it was an interesting weekend. We do have a special guest with us here tonight.
Yes.
You know him from his previous appearances on this show as well as on the main event. This is Mr. Aaron George. How are you, Aaron?
I am fantastic, boys. Glad to be here.
All right. We're happy to have you. So we figured what we'd do tonight. We're going to talk Hall of Fame. We're going to talk WrestleMania. Raw is going on right now. We'll give you updates throughout the night. So I will this update, bring everyone up to speed what's happened so far and where we're at while we're recording this. Triple H came out to open the show. Daniel Bryan came out to open the show, got a mega reaction from New Orleans crowd. Triple H put himself into a rematch tonight for the world title. Batista and Randy Orton showed up backstage. We're not very happy. We're very upset. And Triple H and Stephanie made them a match for the tag team titles against the Usos. And that's kind of where we stand right now. We have John Cena, Big E, and Sheamus versus the Wyatts is the match going on right now. So. A pretty big show, and there's a lot of rumors out there as where we're headed tonight on this show, and that is, and we'll see if it comes to fruition by the time you listen to this, but mm-hmm. Evolution reforming, taking the tag titles with maybe a little bit of Brock Lesnar mixed in on their side, and standing tall at the end of the night with the Shield making the save for Daniel Bryan, and I did see a lot of Shield versus Evolution rumors today around on the internet, so... we will see. Also, to give a quick update, The Undertaker reportedly suffered a major concussion or a serious concussion and is in the hospital. So we will cover that as well as we move through the show. So, guys, let's quickly talk Hall of Fame. Did you both watch it live?
Yes, I did watch it live. By the way, episode 303.
Yes.
Just wanted to put the stamp on it. Yes, sorry, I actually did. I did watch it live last night. Yeah. I did watch it live last night. Yes.
I watched it after the fact. I saw the speeches after the fact.
Okay. Now, do you have the network, Aaron?
Nope.
Okay. I just want to see where we lie. So we, I watched the Hall of Fame on the network live. Mania, we watched at Boneheads, like we said, and that was on the pay-per-view feed, so we did not watch on the network feed. But it sounded like there was no issues with either, which is a big win for them. You know, there's other issues going on with the subscriber numbers and the stocks and all that. We're not getting into that tonight. But so the stream was, it was pretty good. So the Hall of Fame opened with Lita, inducted by Trish Stratus. Her induction speech went a little bit long, Lita's. The crowd overall was actually much better than last year, Scott, when we were there. I hated the crowd around us last year.
Our crowd last year was absolutely disgusting and disrespectful. The New Orleans crowd was well, they were warned ahead of time, but sometimes that might be worse. But
right.
yeah, they were perfect. They were very good. Lita's speech was good. She just not that she's not charismatic, but I feel like she didn't deliver it with any real, not like the guy, not the person that went after her. But she had good stories, and she had the props, and, you know, drunk. Boy, did Arn look like he, Arn! Arn, Hall of Fame starting! Arn, put the beer down, come on!
Yeah, Arn did not look good at all.
he was a mess.
Aaron, any thoughts on Lita's speech?
It was obviously heartfelt, but it felt a lot like a Lita promo.
Yes.
You know, she's saying the right things, but there's nothing behind it.
It was just all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and the story, she kind of told the same stories a couple times in different ways, and not a lot of brevity. But, you know, right out of the gate, I saw a lot of complaining online by people saying, oh, this is going to take forever, it's going to go on all night. But, you know, I don't look at it as the way it's not meant to be. Sure, they're televising it, but to me, it's not meant to be for entertainment purposes. It's these people's chance to get up there and take their honor as they want and give the speech that they want. And I don't care if someone doesn't want to stay up till 1 a.m. Fucking go to bed and watch it the next day. Like, whatever. This is Lita's chance. This is, you know, Carlos Colon's chance. This is their chance to get up there and have their moment. And they shouldn't give a shit if you at home, you know, is getting antsy because you ate too many fucking Cheetos or whatever. It's like, just if you want to watch, watch. If you don't, don't. You know, it's one thing. Whatever. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but that's just my take on it.
You're bang on. Like, I don't know. I feel privileged to be able to watch that. Like, it used to be a private ceremony, right? So, like,
exactly.
Give them their time. Let them talk. Who cares?
Right. And, you know, maybe there's a reason USA cut it down all those years, and everyone got mad they wanted to see the whole thing. Well, yeah, saw the whole thing, you know.
And then you still complain, yeah.
Ridiculous. So, up next, Jake the Snake Roberts, inducted by DDP. I loved the DDP's induction presentation. I thought that was really good, and I thought Jake's acceptance speech, and Scott, I'm curious your take on this, probably second only in history to Bobby at this point.
Jake
maybe arguably tied with Bobby because it was amazing.
No, Bobby's speech in 2004 was awesome, very heartfelt and emotional. Jake, I mean, Jake talked in that, probably because his throat is probably shot
right.
from all the smoking he's done in his life of many things, but he pulled off a Jake promo, but instead of cutting it on an opponent, he cut it on his life.
Right.
And, you know, with his family there, and saying that they're letting me back in. I mean, look, we all watch Beyond the Mat. We mm-hmm. did an episode of way back in the day. It's season one of the Place to Be podcast. And he was a fucking train wreck.
Yeah.
And this was, what, 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
And he looked better now than he did when he was back in 96.
Yeah, he did.
He was wrestling 96. Yeah. He looks better now.
Yeah, he absolutely does. It was a tremendous moment to see a guy. It was almost like if you're a Catholic and you're going to confession. And he was the person going to confession, and we were the priest.
Yeah.
And I think, and he wanted to just pour his life of what he did so wrong, and kudos to DDP who inducted him and just showed. Here's a guy who was one of the greatest superstars ever, maybe second or third to Hogan in the Federation era in terms of popularity as a face, and of course we all know he's an incredibly awesome heel. And he just poured out what's going on. I mean, it's clear as day. We saw the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view and the Beyond the Mat. This guy was you know, one toke on the verge of death.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is. He got his chance again. And he's you know, there's a few wagon issues that he's fallen off of. But DDP has kept him on the straight and narrow. You and I saw him, JR, last year at the con. And he looked pretty good. I'm glad he cut his hair. But we saw him last year, and he looked pretty good, and he looked even better Saturday night.
Yeah, what'd you think of that, Aaron, and his speech and its place in history?
Yeah.
What can you say about it? It was awesome. Like, very few – I find there's very few wrestlers that really hit a nerve that really hits truth. Mm-hmm. There's always like a bit of, I don't want to say a bit of phoniness, but when Jake speaks, you know he's speaking from the heart.
Right.
You know, and you just don't get that often. Like Hulk Hogan, there's always that, all right, brother, take it down, right?
Right. Yeah.
But Jake, that's a real man. It's a real man with real problems. And I don't know, like this might come up later, but like I thought the Hall of Fame ceremony was such a testament to not only the superstars, but also DDP. Like, he's really helped these men. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's gonna be one of the next ones in the Hall of Fame, right? Just for what he's done.
Yeah. Even if he didn't have a career, like, right. Put him in.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And he, and Jake, you know, he was a captivating guy, and he lured us in as a performer. And now when you loop in his personal story and all the triumph over what he's gone through, and I'm not going to call it a tragedy because it's not a tragedy. He brought it all on himself. But, you know, what he's battled through in his own life to get back to where he is today, it was an emotional time to watch because it was a guy – we're so used to these guys dying on us at this point. You know, it's like so many tragic stories there are out there and so many guys we grow up with that have not climbed their way out. And to see a guy like this find his way out and find his way back to the light, a guy we all loved growing up and followed, it was really cool.
Well, and he's the worst one too, right? Like he's the one we all expected to be dead.
Right, and he's still going.
Yeah.
And the other guy that we talk about later on the show.
Right, he's the other one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a great moment, an awesome, awesome moment, and it's one definitely up there with the top induction reception ceremony presentations ever. So up next we had, I believe, Mr. T was third, and that was an interesting goings-on there. So T went on for like 15 minutes about his mother and all that stuff, and it was cool, but it got a little old, and then by the time he moved on to his brothers, and we hit the 20-minute mark, I think, that's when, in a very controversial decision, Kane came out and just kind of stared at him until T apologized like a dog who shit on the carpet and walked off solemnly. And, you know, I felt bad for him. I did, that they did that to him. I'm not one of the ones that's saying it's like ultimately classless or anything like that. I mean, it was T hijacked the thing, and it looked like he had pages and pages of notes, and I'm sure he didn't mean to do it. I think he was just honored, but you got to take note of what other celebrity guys have done. Go out there, mention your place, mention your role, get a few words in and take off. But I give T a little bit extra rope because I don't look at him on the same level as Euchre or Drew Carey, those guys. You know, he did a lot more. Without him, who knows if we're even at WrestleMania 30 anyway. So, to me, he was given more slack in my eyes. So, as he was going on and on, I'm like, I'm not going to be the one sitting here making fun of it. I'm going to let him go because of what he did mean to the company. But at some point, you got to mention why you're there, and that was WrestleMania 1. And I don't know if he's going to get there eventually at minute 40 or what. So, it was a very odd moment. Did you agree, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want the... You certainly don't want the brass to edit any of these speeches, but you should tell all the inductees, look, you know, mention your career. Don't mention us if you don't want to, but at least mention your career. And I mean, somebody should have told T, you know, I'm glad you love your mother, and we all love our mother, whether they're on this earth or not anymore. But you know, you're here for a reason, and bring it up at some point. And I think you might have just lost. I think you just got lost in the moment. I wouldn't. It wasn't like Backlund's last year where he just kind of went off on some whatever the hell it was.
Crazy.
Yeah, like he just went batshit. I think, which was still entertaining in its own right. But I think T just got lost in the moment and didn't get to it. And at least they brought out a guy that nobody likes. Not nobody likes, but at least they brought out like the authority heel. Like they kept it storyline. It was almost like a kayfabe moment. So that was fine. But I'm happy he's in. He was a celebrity that we all thought needed to be in. But the speech itself was very touching. But yeah, you got to mention why you're actually being inducted. It's not because you were a great son or anything, you know.
How do you know that, Scott? Maybe he was the best son of all.
Well, this isn't the World SE, World Son Entertainment, okay? If it was, he could be on like Little House or some fucking, you know, family show or something. I don't know. But no, he's here because he teamed with Hogan and won the first WrestleMania main event. That's why. So.
Yeah, you can tell right away why Clubber Lang like had no lines in Rocky III.
Hey, woman. Don't. Hey, yeah, woman.
Hey, I'm going to get you.
Hey, woman. You should have said that to Linda. Hey, woman. have been pretty funny. But no, he did fine. But yeah, I mean, he was. I think he kind of lost his way a little bit, and I don't think he realized. Oh crap! It's like, I'm told I have to stop. Okay, bye. It's like,
but you know what too though? Like, I don't know if you guys have ever done a lot of public speaking, but like, you totally lose track of time when you're doing it, right? Like,
well, I'm sure they must have had a clock or something there,
or a red light they were flashing in his eyes or something.
Yeah, I'm sure they did, but that's all right. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was fine.
Okay, so we move along here, and I believe next was Paul Bearer next? I think so. So Kane came back out, and I thought that probably the second best induction speech of the night was his behind DDP. A very impressive one, did it all off notes, all out there, you know, rattling off a lot of William Moody's history and past, and I thought he did a great job paying tribute to him. And I thought Taker's moment at the end was great, too.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. Seemed very fitting what Taker did Saturday night when we talk about his Sunday, but it was a great moment, except, you know, I'm so glad the Suns were there, but seriously, man, you don't wear dark t-shirts under under tuxedos. I mean, didn't anybody teach you anything?
Yeah, not the well.
And then he had the same thing on the next night. This is so bad.
He would not be entering to Sharp Dress Man if he was a wrestler, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not.
All right, so after that, we had Razor Ramon, who I thought was a little bit short, didn't get a ton of time. I don't know if he was told to be cut short or if he just was kind of doing a brief thing himself. I thought Nash's induction speech was pretty good, too. What did you think, Aaron, of seeing Hall back out there?
Oh, it was great. He looked great, too. Didn't he look great? Like, he looked in shape. I mean, he obviously looks older, but again, like, I'm just so happy to see these guys getting it together. Like, to me, that's, I don't know, it's more important than them being in the Hall of Fame in a way. Like, I just want them to live.
Yeah, what did you think of the Click reunion there, Scott?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's I mark out constantly because you don't see it that often. You never get to see the original Click together that often. So, I know I'm always smiling when I see them. And we've got, what, three left? I mean, Nash, I'm sure, will go in at some point. Obviously, Triple H at some point. X-Pac, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure
maybe
he'll go in.
2044.
Yeah, you look at some of the guys in there. I'm sure he'll go in at some point.
But no, it was great to see. It was awesome.
When does Just Incredible go in?
He gives Andy his lighter back.
Okay, up next we have Carlos Colon, inducted by Carlito, Eddie, and Orlando Colon. His family there, of course, is Primo and Epico. And Carlito stole the show here with his induction notes, talking about basically how things haven't changed since he's left, because he's still, you know, told to, his time will be cut short, and you know, he's filling time before the main event and everything else. He had a lot of good one-liners, and a guy that clearly didn't seem to have much interest in coming back, or didn't expect to ever come back with what he said. And then Carlos Colon was Carlos Colon.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, he might as well go on out there and say thank you with a box of tapes are in the back.
pretty much what Leave the tapes out of your trunk in my dressing room and get out of here.
No, it was fine. This is a guy that deserved to go in. I mean, he, you know, led one of the greatest, one of the greatest international promotions, the WWC, and it's going to be, I mean, obviously the one everybody's looking forward to is Memphis, and we'll talk about that next week on the main event, but, you know, the WWC is one of those legendary promotions with probably one of the most legendary feuds ever, which was Carlos Colon and Abdul the Butcher sticking forks and spoons into each other's foreheads. But you know, it was nice to give him a moment, and Carlito's just, he's such a jobber, you know, so he fits right in. Boy, that hair was getting like really out of hand. Huh? I guess the indies he couldn't get to a barber on the indie circuit. I
mean, comb. All right. Main event time was the Ultimate Warrior, inducted by Linda McMahon. Oh, I thought she did a fine job too with hers. A little bit of insight into their personal relationship. And then Warrior himself went quite a while and got the time he's wanted for a while now to speak. And it was a very interesting speech. You could tell there were times where he clearly was holding back and even teased that, well, you know, I could be saying stuff here, but I'm not gonna. And as it's known, he signed a pretty big, I think, lucrative Legends deal. So I'm sure he doesn't want to blow that. And I don't think this is the time to come out there and shoot on guys anyway. I mean, that would have been pretty classless on his end. After all, he bitches about being, you know, a good man and a good person. To come out there and to start crapping on all these guys during his Hall of Fame speech would have been very weird. So, you know, he got his shots in at the DVD and how upset he was about it. And, you know, those were coming. And hopefully this allows him to put a lot of this, like Brett in 06. Hopefully this allows him to put a lot of the bad stuff behind him and move on.
What did you guys think of Linda's induction? Like, do you think it's her natural tone? Because listening to it, it's – I don't know if it's her natural tone, but it felt a little backhanded for me. Did you guys get that at all? Or
you know,
it's
funny,
go ahead, Scott.
You know, well, it's funny you say that, Aaron, because I got – there were a couple of lines where I did feel like she was subtly throwing a jab in, but very subtly though. The way she worded things did seem a little like backhanded compliment kind of thing.
Yeah, like the whole business about his name, the way it was worded, and like I don't know, like it almost felt like it could have been on that DVD.
It almost felt like too like a little bit of a I don't want to say like more like a friendly rib, kind of like almost like a roasting a little bit, because I think she knew that Warrior was going to come out and probably get his say in, and I think she was just in a way kind of giving her perspective of things, you know, because I knew she probably assumed the company was going to become a punching bag during a lot of his speech. So I think she was just getting a couple friendly shots in, a couple friendly jabs. It seemed like they have a pretty good relationship. So I don't think she was doing it. I don't think she was doing it to be, you know, a bitch or anything. I think she was just trying to be funny.
I don't think so either. But it did seem a little funny. It's funny you brought that up, Aaron, because I kind of thought the same times.
Well, that's what I want to believe. Like that it is just like the friendly thing, right? Like I want them to have closure there, because like I think in his speech too, you can tell how hurt he was by the DVD. Like,
well, I would be too.
Yeah, of course,
I would be too.
Oh yeah, he was clearly hurt by the DVD. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So I'm hoping this between this and the new DVD, it helps him move on and get by it. So overall, I thought it was a pretty enjoyable Hall of Fame. Some good moments, some memorable moments. Some went a little bit long. But I enjoyed watching it. I didn't feel like I wasted my time at all. So us into, of course, WrestleMania 30 the next night. We had the pre-show. We had a tag title match on the pre-show. And then we had, interesting, Sean Merriman, former football player.
Yeah, that was very weird.
It was kind of out of nowhere. So
yeah.
Let me ask you guys this quick, and then we'll get into it. Aaron, what was your expectation level heading into the show? Where did you think best case scenario it could rank? Where did you think, what were your expectations overall, what you were going to get?
Well, it was low. It was pretty low. But I remember going in thinking the last time I was this low on a WrestleMania was WrestleMania 22. And I love WrestleMania 22. So I was kind of – it was low, but there was a hint of, this might be good. So, but if I had to guess, I would say middle of the road. That's what I was looking at.
I would have said about the same. I think when we did the Brian Chad show with our ranking the manias, and I asked the same question at the end of that show, you know, where do you guys expect this to fall? And I don't think any of us had it near the top five. I think we said maybe kind of lingering around 10 if all things went well, and we didn't really know what to expect. Scott, how about you? What were your thoughts heading in? Were you really excited? I mean, we're always excited for Mania, but were you looking at this going in thinking it could be a top three or five show?
Well, I mean, you had matchups that could conceivably have gone, you know, and when it comes to WrestleMania, if guys are knowing that they want to be on their game, any match could be five stars. You had at least three matches that could have reached 4.5, and that's the two Daniel Bryan matches and Cena Bray. I don't think anybody expected, in terms of grading, Taker and Brock to go more than three max. And so I was anticipating just great wrestling and really good storytelling, because I think most of what we saw was probably very predictable. You have your cynics, but I think most of what we were doing, what we were thinking results wise was going to happen fairly predictably. But I think we just wanted to be entertained. And I was curious about filling, because we talked about it on the main event last week that – and we talked about it at your house, JR, on Sunday that, you know, we're talking eight matches in, what, 3 hours and 50 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, where's all this fill going to come in?
Right.
And you know, you had some great points about what to fill with, and they actually did that, as we talked – as we'll mention, how to fill kind of the gaps there. There wasn't many dead spots on this show.
No, and it didn't have that bloated feel. I'll give them that. I thought this was pretty well timed after last year's kind of haphazardly timed show. And I think there's a big difference, too. When you relegate the music acts to entrance music, I think that's a big upgrade.
Yes.
Over doing it as like a concert in the middle of the show. And I'm one that actually enjoyed Diddy's concert last year. I didn't mind it, but that's because I'm kind of a mark for all those songs. So I didn't mind that. But when you take that break for 10, 11, 12 minutes and it's a concert and you're resetting, you kind of lose the flow of the show. But here we had two really good performances. Like the Wyatt theme live was really awesome. Mm. And as was... Orton's. So, you know, you get your music performances, you get your celebrities within that, and it's still, you're having the entrance to the match. So you're not eating up separate time. It's just part of the show. It's organic.
Right.
It was really cool. I thought that was helpful. And also, as we mentioned, Scott, last night, Scott, no celebrities at all besides those guys. So we didn't have a lot of that filler or fluff. The celebrities were the legends from the past Manias.
Yeah, no, it worked out very well in that aspect. I agree with you on the timing. Nothing was worse. What was Kid Rock at 25 was really bad, and obviously the highly criticized one was Machine Gun Kelly in Florida 2 years ago. That was just that was brutal.
Yeah,
and those were entrances.
Right.
Those,
yeah. I guess it's the one time it could be bad.
But that was bloated. But it's different though. That's like bloat. They played the whole song, then Rock and Cena came out.
Right.
As here, the song's playing and the guys are coming out.
Right. They're playing the entrance music. They're not playing a song for each guy.
Right. Exactly.
This was, they're actually playing their theme. So I liked that. I thought it was a different way to do it. And I thought it worked out well. So let's look at the opener here. The Usos defeated the Matadors, the Real Americans, and Ryback Axel to retain the tag team titles in 16 minutes. We didn't see this match, Scott. Well, you and Dan and George were watching on Dan's phone.
Yeah.
They had the pay-per-view feed up, so they weren't showing the match on the pre-show. Chad, who was there live, told us last night that the match was actually really good. It was one of his better matches on the night. Aaron, did you see this match?
Yeah, I watched it on the phone as well.
What did you think of this one?
It was good. It was a fun, great little tag opener.
Of course.
That's about...
Yeah.
Go on. I was just going to say that's about it.
Yeah, and the big moment, of course, was the splitting of the Real Americans. You knew it was coming after a while. They finally did, and Cesaro... finally kind of put that to bed. I'm guessing tonight on Raw or at some point very soon we'll see Cesaro versus Swagger. I'm thinking this week on TV. That's usually what they would do to put that team to bed finally. And we were hoping there'd be something else for Cesaro later in the night and that this was not going to be his only moment because we've heard all the rumors of a major push coming.
Oh,
go ahead, Aaron.
And he got a huge pop when he turned, too.
Yes,
he did. It was massive, so it's time now.
Yeah, I think that I was gonna say that and what we'll talk about in a moment cinches that. But I like the tag. From what I was watching on Dan's phone, it seemed very well paced, and I think that's people were complaining about why are they bothering to put this on the pre-show? Put it on the main show. You have the time. But look, WWE wants to make money. They're a business, and as much as the show was on the network. I mean, JR, we watched it. 10 minutes later, when we got to your house, it was already on the server. People are gonna, I'll still buy the DVD. Mm-hmm. That's just the kind of guy I am, and you're gonna want that tag. Tag's not gonna be on the network. The tag will be on the DVD. So I'm fine with it. I had no problem with it being on the pre-show, and it was a good match. It was a good match.
And considering what they were gonna do later with Cesaro, with those guys, it's fine that it's on the pre-show. Like, I think that was the argument, right? Was that, what are they going to – how can Cesaro not be at WrestleMania? But with what they did, I was totally cool with it.
So from there, we go into the show. No America the Beautiful this year, which was interesting. Have you read anywhere if they did it in the arena or anything like that? I haven't seen anything about it. I'm sure Lillian just did the, usual God Bless America or whatever, but I didn't see anything. Not God Bless America, the national anthem. But I didn't see anything about America the Beautiful. So is this the first time, Scott, in 30 Manias we didn't have it?
It's got to be. We won't go through all of them, but 12? Did 12 have one? I guess. 13? Those didn't have... 14 had, the Chris Warren band. 15 was what? Boys to Men? They were good. I enjoyed that one. 2000? 2001? Yeah, I think everyone since... Probably 13 was the last one where I don't think there was an on-camera America the Beautiful. But definitely since 17, I think we've had it. Definitely. Wow. So be the first time since probably 98 that we didn't have an on-air, if there was one, an on-air America the Beautiful.
So opener Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, of course, to earn a spot in the main event later in the night. Triple H's entrance was interesting. He had another
awesome.
Big epic outfit on and everything else, and it was an interesting way to start the show. They go 26-47, and Daniel Bryan won clean by pinning Triple H. Was I believe what the knee to the face, right? He beat him with. So a very, very, very good match. A great way to open the show. Probably a top three opener of all time. I mean, we just did this on the five count on the website, and it's going to be up there near Bret and Owen somewhere. So not as good as Bret and Owen, but it's definitely in that top couple. So Daniel Bryan won and advanced to the main event. Aaron, what did you think of this opener here?
I thought it was great. When he came out in that golden mask, it launched a Skeletor joke for us that lasted the rest of the show. Everything was Skeletor. And did you guys find that Stephanie McMahon was dressed a little bit like Mike McGurk? Yes. Like in her announcement.
But you look like an airline stewardess is what you look like. Like an old school airline stewardess for some reason.
What I loved about the match, and this is one of the things I was worried about, because I was never worried about – I always felt Daniel Bryan would win, but I'm a big proponent of how someone wins is important too. And my worry was that Triple H was going to basically take the whole match and it was going to be kind of fluky. And we didn't get that at all. Like, no. I thought it was a really well-balanced match, great near falls, and I hate Triple H in general, but he did an awesome job, so –
When he wants to put a guy over, and he wants to work that style, like there's few guys better. I mean, he can do it, and he can do it well, and he did it last night. And he worked a style that's more conducive to Bryan. He broke out some different offense, and
yeah, Tiger Suplex. What the hell was that?
Yeah, I mean, his chicken wing was pretty sweet too. He really worked his ass off and did a great job, and it was a great opener. And I agree with you, Aaron. It's great to see a lot of balance. It was not just a squash with a banana peel at the end. Beat him. He pinned him clean. No roll up. No nothing else. He went over him strong. Yeah. And that's what he needed to go into that main event.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised they didn't tap him out. That's kind of what I thought they would do, but I'm glad based on what was coming.
Right. I think they wanted to maybe save that, and also, you know, if they are going to fight again tonight or in the future, may you save that tap for later. But yeah, no qualms for me from Triple H not tapping. I thought it was fine. I thought he put him over as about as clean as you possibly can in this kind of match. And it was kind of cool seeing Stephanie out there with him again too. Scott, we had a little tidbit about that, right? Didn't we have? What was it the first time since when?
First time since Judgment Day 2001, which was Triple H's last pay per view as a heel before he popped his first quad, that Stephanie seconded him to the ring. He hadn't seconded him to the ring since what was the date? May 21st, 2001. So
and
14
and
years.
She was great.
Yeah, she was really
good. Yeah, she was.
The doting over him when he's hurt, it's just
that
so
angry
smarmy
face and those weird. Yeah. What the fuck were those weird shorts? There must be rich people paying whatever the fuck that was. They were
we can't afford those shorts.
Workout shorts or something. It was very strange. But yeah, no, she was awesome. She was awesome because she's the quintessential heel. She definitely knows how to channel her inner 98 Vince better than anybody. Obviously, she's family. So, but yeah, it was the whole package was great. The match was really good. Like you said, JR, he really, for a guy who everyone breaks balls about that doesn't, you know, that has his favorites and stuff. He really wanted to get Bryan over and really push him, particularly since you and I were talking. We've been talking for a few weeks now about match placement and the card in general. And we were wondering, and you said it's going to run one end of the gamut or the other. Either they're going to bookend the matches or they're going to back-to-back the matches. And I think bookending them was better. And they did a great job of making sure that his pop was not going to be flat when he came back out at the end of the night. I don't think it was going to anyway.
Right.
But
no, this was the way I had said. I mean, I think I said that on Kevin's show weeks ago, on the Kevin Kelly show, that they were going to open with this, and after the match, they were going to bust him up a little bit, and then you kind of tease throughout the rest of the night. You know, I thought maybe they'd build more of a big deal about it. Will he make it? They didn't really do that as much, but they did go to him. They showed him getting worked on. So I figured they'd open just for that reason and to build and give some hype to that match. If you do them back to back, I think you lose the opportunity to double up on that pop and to sustain it as well. I think if you had him out there for over an hour straight, at some point the crowd would have been burnt a little bit, especially after what led into the main event, which we'll cover in a few minutes.
Yeah, and if you put them back to back too, it's almost like the story of the match for the second match doesn't allow Brian to be as involved, right?
Right, yes.
He'll probably be laying on the outside for a bunch, and that would just make the match worse.
No, this is the best way to go. I thought they did a good job of it. They followed the WrestleMania 10 template, and I thought it was nice work. I thought they made the right decision there. So, yeah, go ahead, Scott.
No, I agree. No, okay. I was going
to say. All right, so Daniel Bryan heads to the back to rest up that shoulder, ready for the main event. Up next, we had a six-man. That was basically a six-man squash, and that was the Shield defeating Kane and the New Age Outlaws. I blinked and missed Kane. I didn't think he even came out because I didn't see him get knocked out of the ring. And the Shield polished off the Outlaws with a triple powerbomb onto Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn ended up suffering some injuries from it. They seem like they're legitimate injuries, but I thought this is the perfect setup for this match. I thought it was a great way to continue the Shield's face turn, and the crowd was into it, and I don't think you could have booked this thing any better. You didn't want the Outlaws getting offense on the Shield at this point.
Oh, I agree. That was booked absolutely perfectly. Why are you going to have, you know, Kane, who, you know, it doesn't matter with him, and a, you know, a broken down old tag team doing anything to these three studs? Absolutely not. Perfect way to book it. Get them back strong again and kind of let them ride the full babyface train for at least a month or so. And then we'll see the eventual, I'm sure we'll see the eventual split of them as well. But that was perfectly booked. I don't think you could have. Now, of course, we were all sitting there going, all right, well, there's another 10 minutes they're going to have to put somewhere else. But in that instance, I don't think you were looking for a long, drawn-out match. That was done. That was booked perfectly.
Well, and especially too, since like before the show, everyone's like, "Well, how can Kane and the New Age Outlaws stand up to them?" Like, right, after they've beaten, and it just made perfect sense, made everybody feel good.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was the perfect way to do it, and use them to squash them and keep the Shield strong. And I can't believe this is my fault. I'm going through this thing, and we forgot the opening promo, guys, before Daniel Bryan and Triple H.
That's right, yes.
I don't know how we forgot this moment. So Hulk Hogan, the host of Mania, came out to open the show. Had his one little slip-up, of course, called it the Silver Dome, but I thought he did a pretty good job hyping everyone up. Followed by Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out, the second tour, arguably, maybe tied for the first biggest superstar in wrestling history. They had a little back and forth. Then The Rock came out, and you had the three biggest mainstream stars in the promotion's history, three biggest stars in Mania history out there at once, going at it. They kind of had some laughs. They put over each other. They put over WWE. They put over WrestleMania. I thought they did a really nice job with that. And I thought it was a really good way, in contrast to The Rock's brutal opening of WrestleMania 27. I thought this was the polar opposite.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, it was so much better than the 27 one.
Yeah, 27 was a disaster. That was like an awful, awful way to open that show. This was much, much better. I mean, it helped that you got Hogan out there. I mean, we were hungry to see The Rock, but, you know, he had been around a little bit more recently. Hogan, I don't know. Hogan at WrestleMania 30 has felt right. You're always going to get the nostalgia with him more than you're going to get with other guys anyway.
And then, well, I think everybody got what they wanted, which was that 2 or 3 minute face to face of Hogan and Austin. I mean, right. the doctor was flipping out already. Just watched Austin beat the shit out of him. And Stone Cold was alluding to it, but at this point, that ship's passed. Sadly, that ship passed a long time ago. And well, Austin blames himself for it, but that moment with those three, just, you know, it was perfect. It fit perfectly. I mean, who knows where we'll be in 20 years for WrestleMania 50, but that moment specifically is one of those moments we'll keep forever as fans.
And it was great to have the other two too, because I don't know, like I feel wrestling fans in general don't quite have the same level of love for The Rock as they do for Hogan and Austin. Like, Rock was always the one they turned on.
Right.
Like, it was always – he was always just – they would always cheer the other two over him. And well, I loved
– you know, though, I've seen that, but I feel like the times they turned on him all were kind of explainable. I mean, Austin Rock, they turned on him, but that was Austin's hometown. He had just returned from the injury. And I felt like there was a reason for that, and they had positioned Rock as almost a bit of a heel heading in. Rock – Hogan was the, you know, we're going to talk about this Wednesday. I don't want to get too much into it, but, you know, it was the nostalgia era was really firing up. Hogan back in the red and yellow, you know, basically, ostensibly, not fully in the red and yellow, but heading there. He hadn't been in WWF TV in 9 years. Toronto's kind of an old school nostalgia crowd. Like, there was the obvious reasoning for that one. And then Rock versus Brock Lesnar. Brock was the big monster everyone wanted to see. Rock, everyone knew, was leaving. He had already been kind of part-time. I feel like when Rock was Rock, he wasn't turned on as quickly as he was in later years. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think he's third in this lineup. I think it's clear Hogan and Austin are 1 and 1A, and Rock is slightly behind them, even if Rock's arguably had the biggest success outside of the promotion. But to wrestling fans, he's probably always been third.
I don't think that's arguable.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Nanny doesn't quite stack up to...
If you put together all of Hogan's outside stuff, I mean, you know, he's done pretty well for himself. And at this point, too, you get a factor in his reality show, which actually ended up being very successful for a while. So I don't think it's a runaway, but it's probably not close.
Rock doesn't have a sex tape, so...
Not yet. I mean, Hogan didn't have his till he was 60, so...
We got another 40 or 20 years to wait. Do you guys find that, like, Steve Austin is, like, the least used legend? Maybe not the absolute least, but, like, right, of that stature that they have?
You think that's by his design, though?
I think that's definitely his design. He gets his spots.
Yeah, because he came out, the pop was huge, and he's just so natural.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that dig at Hogan, the little, like... great to be back in a Silverdome. Like, it was just so well timed and placed, you know. Like, I think you're right. It's his design, but like, and maybe too, it just appears that way too because it's been so sparse between appearances.
Well, don't forget too, though, he was on a lot.
Yeah.
Early out of the gate, like he didn't disappear and then come back. I mean, he retired in early 2003. He was on consistently till what? I mean, he was in all the rest of all of 2003. He came back. He was around for part of 2004, came back again a little bit in 2005, and then I guess after that he finally kind of tapered off, right?
Yeah.
I think he was on weekly as a character, which we haven't had from Rock and Hogan.
That's true.
So, all right. So heading back into the show, we come out of the Shield match. We go into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. 30 men in the ring. No surprises, no legends, no nothing. Just pretty much all from the roster. And it was a little weird. I thought we'd get maybe a couple of mystery guys or treats. But on the flip side, I'm not going to complain too much because here we sit every other year bitching that the guys on the roster get screwed for legends and guys coming back. And, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and flip it around now and saying, I wish, you know, Heath Slater was out of the Battle Royal so RVD could be in. These guys deserve the payday. I was fine with it.
My only point of that part, JR, is they made such a big deal about the three shadow spots, and then they didn't really like do anything with them. Why didn't they just fill them or not even talk about them? And then just have the Battle Royal just started.
Yeah,
like the only guy who got an entrance was Big Show, and then they started, and I'm like, oh, where are these other guys? Oh, there's that guy. Like, why bother? You know. Right. It's like this. It's like the, you know, the rumored Savage shadow.
Well, I don't think it's one of those things where I don't think it can hurt. Like, I think they were keeping them open just in case. Maybe they wanted to do something, but they knew they could always stick guys that they had already on the roster in there.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what it was, just in case they wanted to do something and they decided not to. So I had picked Sheamus heading to this thing, and the guy who wanted it, I would have picked if he was on the roster. I didn't completely trust them to put him in it, but that was Cesaro. He ended up fighting Big Show at the end, and in an awesome a moment that ended up being forgotten because of what was to come. In a great, great, memorable spot, he picked up Big Show clean off the mat, walked him over to the ropes, and slammed him to the floor in a tremendous, tremendous star-making spot from him. And then he deadlifted that huge trophy. And I mean, if all the guys that came out of this thing looking good, Cesaro was right at the top of that list.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the end, too. Like, he was pretty dominant throughout, throwing those uppercuts. And yeah, like, I think that was the best Battle Royal I've ever seen. Like, I loved it. Like, I couldn't believe how much I loved it. And this is the problem I'm having with this show. I want to be snarky and mean, but like, just like, I had such a good time watching this Battle Royal. Like, once they cleared out the first like 15 to 17 guys, when it got down to like the final eight, like, it was just, I thought it was just solid.
Yeah.
Like, and all the right guys were there and they were all featured well. Like, I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it was well paced. It felt like a rumble. Like, Battle Royals, most normal Battle Royals, like, oh, he got tossed. Like, it felt like a rumble.
Yeah.
Where you were getting a little antsy about, oh man, he hasn't been eliminated yet. Oh my god, he's almost eliminated. Like, you never think that way with Battle Royals. But it was well shot by the cameras. I thought production last night was really good. I think camera work was good. Everything in that aspect.
And
really
with Manny, as we've seen in the past, there are some nights where they're all off, and some nights where they're all on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always remember, like, WrestleMania 16, the matches were off, commentary was off, everything seemed off. It just seemed like an off night for everyone. Mm-hmm. And even last year, 29. When it seems when one thing's off, everything's off with media. When one thing's on, it seems like everything's on. And this, right. to me, was one that was really on all throughout the night. The production value, the network worked fine. The timing was good throughout the show. Everyone seemed to be on point. There weren't, outside of, you know, Silverdome, Superdome, there were not really that many flubs or anything. So it was a night where everyone seemed pretty locked in.
Yeah, they're getting really good at catching the surprise attacks. You know, like when someone comes in frame and attacks somebody? Like, you used to see them coming from miles away. Now it's just framed perfectly so you don't see them at all.
Right.
I know it's a small thing, but I think that's fantastic. Mm. And you know what I loved about the Battle Royal too is that it's not just Cesaro that looked good. Like, I thought Del Rio looked really good.
Del Rio
too.
Looked great. They pushed the hell out of him in that. I was shocked.
And I'm a big mark for Del Rio. Like, I love those kicks every time. I just want to see someone kick the, like, I love those solid, those stiff kicks. So, like, I thought he looked great. I thought Kingston had a pretty good showing too. Even Sheamus, I thought the Big Show was going to win. I thought they did well too. Like, I thought it was just a great little showcase for everyone. So again, sorry if I'm not an asshole tonight.
It's okay. You're an asshole every time. So.
You got that straight.
It was very well done, and I'm stoked for Cesaro, and we'll see how tonight progresses on Raw, whether they do anything with him tonight, or if, you know, they continue slowly just kind of building him little by little.
Well, have you heard what they're doing with him tonight? Did you hear that at the beginning of the show?
No. What was it?
They're doing like a trophy presentation by Hogan.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
That's a big passing of the torch right there. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Next up was our first of our, well, second, I guess, of our really big matches, and that was John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. Another match that goes over 20 minutes to 22:47. Aaron, what did you think of Bray Wyatt's alternate maroon pants?
Loved it. I'm really sorry. I loved it because it felt like a home uniform for him, which the audience was, right? And so, I don't know, like, it was just great.
So he comes out here and with the other Wyatt members, and this is a match everyone was pretty hyped for, and I was very confident Bray Wyatt was winning this one, especially with his placement in the card. I didn't see why you would have Bray Wyatt in this match if he wasn't going to win. Why even bother doing this right now? When they got down to the spot at the end where Cena had the chair and Bray was daring him to hit him, I thought that's where we were going to get the swerve. Cena would go to hit Harper or Rowan, and Bray would roll him up and get the win. And he rolled him up, and Cena kicked out, and then ended up pinning him with the AA, which I was very, very surprised with, especially when I assumed, well, something else fishy going to happen. Scott, we were talking about this a lot at the table.
Mm.
Now it looks like all the faces are winning all of a sudden. So we were kind of a little dumbfounded when Cena won. And, you know, at first I was really angry because I thought Bray needed the win more. I didn't see what Cena really needed with this win at all. I thought maybe they'd keep the feud going and blow it off. Scott, now you mentioned a couple times having a, you know, bloodbath it or a PG bloodbath at Extreme Rules.
Yes.
And obviously we're not going to get that now, or we may, but it maybe not mean the same. After I slept on it and thought about it, with everything else that would end up happening on the show and all the moments, do you feel that Bray Wyatt winning would have been kind of forgotten in this? Would it not have meant as much in the long run? Because it would have been maybe like the, you know, fourth most merit. I mean, you were the main event, the streak, you know, Cesaro. You know, you had some big moments. You know, the WrestleMania 1 thing that we'll get to, the opening promo, and then you almost forget that Bray Wyatt beat John Cena.
Mm. Do you not feel, though, there were some moments in that match that rank up there, though? Like, when that crowd is singing, he's got the whole world in his hands.
Yes, yep.
Like, that's one cool. It's one of the top moments of the show for me.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point, too. I think that I agree with your point, JR. I think that, I mean, considering what was going on the show and what would end up happening on the show, that Cena Bray Wyatt winning would have been like, all right, you know. Like, when he beat Daniel Bryan at the Rumble, knowing that the Rumble was going to be a forgettable ending, that they wanted that. That was a perfect spot for him to win. Here, we have other stuff going on that's much more epic to come. I guess it's a catch-22. Do you have Cena win, kill the feud, but not kill the mood of the show? Or do you have Bray win, keep a hot young heel star, and then kind of no one remembers it at the end? You know, it's tough.
I think I would have done the DQ here. I think we've talked about that at like WrestleMania 21, where I always thought Cena should have won by DQ and then won the title at Judgment Day. Like, I think here you have the Wyatts interfere. You have the same exact match until the very end. He hits him with the attitude adjustment, and Rowan dives in and breaks it up, and we get the DQ. It wouldn't have mattered. I don't think anyone paid for a clean finish in this one. We had so much still to come. I think we still would have had a 23-minute great match, and then you have May the blow-off next month later. If you wanted to continue and you didn't want to give Bray the win, I thought a DQ was the way to go. I didn't think we needed to pin Bray just yet.
See, I think they could have pinned – I think that's a good idea too. But I think they could have pinned Bray if they would have made it a little more like Cena had to steal the win as opposed to him – like at the end, it looked like he beat all three of them.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like he barely survives, but it's a John Cena match, so we don't usually get that. So.
Right. I feel like even if they had some miscommunication with the chair and he rolled – yeah, you're right. He beat him with his finisher fairly clean. I mean, Bray got a ton of offense and he looked great. And like you said, the crowd was clearly in his back pocket the whole match. So there were some great moments and he felt like he belonged. He felt like a star. This didn't feel like a one and done kind of thing.
No, he felt like a huge star. Yeah.
I just feel like this kind of felt like a little bit of a slight step back for him, but we'll see where they head next with it. Just to catch you up on Raw here. So Orton and Batista did not win the tag titles, but they beat the shit out of the Usos and basically squashed them and then match got thrown out. Batista and Orton, they basically said they didn't care about the titles, and they proved it. But after the match, they stood with their arms raised together. So it looks like they're at least back on the same page, which kind of points towards the Evolution stuff we talked about earlier.
Cool. Yeah, I think if just before we go on, like, I think the only thing that, like, that I really didn't, like, of all the things I loved about the show, the only thing I really didn't love about the Cena match, because I thought it was actually quite a solid match, was I appreciate what they were trying to do with the storytelling of it, with him like being pushed too far.
Mm-hmm.
But Cena's just not the actor to do that. Like,
well, I thought they had it, though. I thought they were on the cusp of it with the chair thing.
Yeah, but it's just like he doesn't possess any of the subtlety to pull it off. Like, you're right. They're doing it. Like, they're doing the steps. But, like, it felt like – you remember when he was fighting Kane and there was that grunt at the camera for, like, 30 seconds? When he beat up Zack Ryder a couple of years ago, like that's what it felt like to me. And I wish that would have carried through the whole match. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're right. They did do it at points, but then that was gone by the end of the match. By the end of the match, it was just a typical celebration, you know?
Well, I agree with that. Yeah, by the end, I think it was. I didn't feel it too much in the match, but I thought in that moment was the moment they could have done it. Like, either he snaps and bashes Bray and wins that way, or gets himself DQ'd. They could have done that too.
Yeah.
He finally snaps and goes over the edge. It felt like, again, back. It just feels like they're always on the verge of doing something with Cena, and they pull back at that last second.
And it's such a shame because, like, I mean, the criticism with him for the longest time was that he wasn't a good wrestler, but he's really good.
Yeah.
And all that's missing is that just that character tweak. And it would make him interesting, and they probably get – I have to believe at this point that the reaction he gets is the reaction they want.
Yeah, and I don't think – Scott, we talked about this last night too. Mm-hmm. The Cena turn, I feel like, doesn't have to come just yet. Like, I think they have another couple years of him in the tank like this, and then you do the Hogan 96 turn with him when they're at the very end of the rope and you revitalize them. Like, they're not there yet. So I'm actually okay with them now. You know, after years of us calling for it, I'm back in the camp of whatever. Just keep him like this for a while, and then eventually you pull it when you need to pull it.
Well, and for me too, he is a heel. Like, he's a heel to over half the audience, right?
Right, but I mean, he's not, you know what I'm saying, he's not positioned as a heel. He acts like one and he's treated like one, but he's not positioned as one. And I'm talking about the official heel turn. I mean, Hogan was a heel for years too, you could argue, before he turned heel. So, I mean, to me it's the same thing. So, Scott, I want your take on that, but first, just to update, RVD made his return right here. He's going to face Damian Sandow, so it looks like he's back for another run with the company. No surprise there. It's been rumored. So what did you think, Scott, about the Cena heel turn and where they stand with it?
Well, I mean, the way that the line's drawn in the sand – I can't really use all these metaphors. Like, the way the line's drawn in the sand that could possibly happen at the end of this show, you're in a weird position where – he could be used as a huge over baby face defending the good of the company over these, you know, this new hierarchy, or he becomes part of the hierarchy. I mean, we're talking about this faction of guys. Who's to say Cena now starts to realize, you know, I want my spot, and, you know, I'm not ready to give it up to anybody. You know, he always mentioned last year, you know, I want the young guys, you know, I want the future here, but you got to go through me to do it. And, you know, I don't know if that was necessarily by accident.
Mm.
So at some point in the next few months, I think we'll find out whether or not a heel turn is ever going to happen. I mean, you know, Cena's getting to the point now. He's been in the business for a while. I mean, this look, Hogan didn't turn major heel till what, almost 15 years into his career. So it's, you know, if he stays healthy, which he obviously will because he's that kind of guy, a heel turn can always be in the works. And we always said that there's the red button in Vince's office if the company was on the precipice, mm-hmm. and they needed something really huge, just push the button and Cena becomes Hollywood Cena or something like that, you know? It just needs to be done right. It's kind of like Taker, who we'll get to in a moment. Those things need to be done right, or you don't do it at all.
All right, well, that's a good tease, and that's where we're going to take a break. We have three matches left, two of them very major, and, of course, the most memorable moments of the night. First, we'll take a little breather, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the last three matches.
Awesome.
Because.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Yeah. in Rhode Island and look at the great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
All right, Nation, we're back looking at WrestleMania 30, and we got a few more matches to go. Quickly talking about PlayStationNation.com, where we had tons of WrestleMania coverage. We had another reaction show with Will and the Gang, Chris Zellner, Dylan Hales, and Pete. They ran through the show right after it ended last night. So if you're looking for instant reaction from different voices than ours, that's up at the top of the page now. We had Scott Keith's written rant for WrestleMania 30. That was done right after the show as well. Plus the live blog with Steve Willey, Glenn Butler, and Jordan Duncan. They were covering you through the show. So all kinds of WrestleMania 30 coverage right there, as well as our show tonight. We had Ben Morse's all-time WrestleMania card. He went through our show, Scott, that we've done when we built our all-time March card, and he went through and did it himself, like he's been doing for January and February as well. Steve Rogers took a look at a history of WrestleMania Battle Royals. Ben was also, since he was out of town at WrestleMania this week, we had Brad Woodling stepping in with Total Divas, watching Total Divas. Him and Jen Engel did episode 3. We have all your reviews, Ring of Honor. We had SmackDown, The Honor Report by Stephen J. Sutton. We had Superstars, Main Events, SmackDown, Raw, everything for you there. As well, we had The High Spot, previewed WrestleMania. Of course, never too late to go back and reread that because Glenn and Steve are awesome when they write it. Five Count this month was WrestleMania openers. So kind of a hot topic right now with the great Daniel Bryan Triple H opener. See where it ranks to the ones we discussed in there. We had a bunch of staff members. We had Andrew Reich previewing the Final Four. We had a new Hard Traveling Fanboys off the page looking at the Green Lantern, the movie. We had Scott Keith doing NXT. Matt Davis did a really nice preview for Supercard of Honor, kind of looking back at when he became a Ring of Honor fan, looking over the last 2 years of the evolution of where they've come as a promotion. We had the recent episodes, episode 6 of the main event, Scott, with your crew. We had you and Johnny Reckless finally made his PTB Nation debut after 303 episodes of, talking about him on our show. He finally debuted. We had the Kevin Kelly Show, episode 6 as well. And Jordan Duncan did a great piece on WrestleMania matches we didn't get but we wanted. Mm-hmm. So tons of WrestleMania stuff, all still up there, all still relevant. Whoever wants to stop talking about WrestleMania. So a lot of cool things happening. If you're interested in writing for us, hit us up at info@placetobenation.com. You can follow us at facebook.com/placetobenation or at Twitter, place number to be Nation. All right, home stretch here, WrestleMania 30. Up next was the match for the streak, The Undertaker battling Brock Lesnar, and we saw a lot of the kind of hand-wringing and bitching and moaning heading into this match was the predictability. Brock had done nothing to show that he may be strong enough to go over. They had only really fought once. Well, they had the pen hand stabbing, and then we came back on the last week, and Brock finally landed some shots in on Taker. But it seems very anticlimactic. Everyone just assumed Taker was going to win, and we'd move on to next year where he'd face Cena or Sting. And Scott, I think we spent most of the 25 minutes of this match talking about who he'd fight next year, too.
I know.
And the year after. Would he be done next year? Would he fight Cena? What, they have to have him and Cena. Are they going to do him and Sting? Blah, blah, blah. And then at the 25-minute mark, the unthinkable happens. Brock Lesnar hit his third F5 and ended the streak. And it led to, arguably, and we have a lot to talk about with this match, but I'm going to ask you this, guys, right off the bat, Scott. Mm-hmm. Was this the biggest upset win in WrestleMania history?
Yes. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. No doubt. Other than maybe Cena. And even that is a, even that could be a 50-50 proposition, minimum.
Cena who?
In terms of Taker future opponents.
No, I'm saying was this the biggest upset in Mania history?
Right, but my point is, other than him, there's nobody else you would have ever thought legitimately was ever going to get it, except for maybe him somewhere down the line. Two Shawn matches, two Triple H matches. Mm. Punk last year, that one I mean, we talked about it a lot last year on our shows, JR. I legitimately thought that was a great opportunity. If there was anybody that really could have taken the ball and run with it,
well,
it would have been Punk.
I think in retrospect, it's probably a good idea not that Punk be the guy, seeing he's kind of a hothead and ended up walking out.
Life would have changed had he won that match.
I don't think so. I mean, who knows how they would have used him. He could have still been aggravated or burnt out. I don't...
Well, that's his fault, but...
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think he was the right guy to do it.
Yeah,
it's his fault that he's burnt out.
but why... So the point is... But still, if you look at it... then maybe they shouldn't have done him last year. There were some other guys that could have done last year, too.
No, the match was great. I'm just saying I don't think he was the right choice to end the streak. That's all.
Well, probably not. And I think the previous four matches were just to give us five-star matches. I don't think anybody ever expected Shawn or Triple H to win any of those.
Well,
I don't know.
Aaron,
with Triple H, you never know. And that's part of the drama of that match, right?
Especially it wasn't going to happen. Triple H isn't that stupid. Mm. But
nobody's that proud.
I think... Nah, he's not that stupid. There was nothing for him to use it for. But the point is, I don't think anybody thought Brock Lesnar would ever use it. Here's a guy who only shows up every 6 months, and you're like, well, all right, so he loses here, and then he's gone, and then something else will come up at SummerSlam or whatever. And I don't think anybody expected it. There were people literally dumbfounded.
The reactions were up there, probably up there with...
40-year-old men were in tears.
Yeah, there might have been... the reactions were up there with Warrior Savage at 7, as far as...
Yeah.
As far as reaction, fan reaction of the crowd. I mean, of course, the infamous one with the guy with the white shirt and the glasses.
Just like, yeah, cowboy hat.
Yeah, last night.
Oh, okay.
He's already become the meme around the world for that match. And some of the open jaws and the shock. And I remember sitting there thinking, where's the dusty finish? But I'm like, wait a minute. They didn't do anything to deserve a dusty finish. Wait, is this really it? And it was just shocking. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, and we're going to have a video up. We're putting together a blog of pictures and videos we took. And we were all just sitting there like, he pinned him? What? What? So anyway,
it's how we pinned him too, because like, this was the exact conversation we were having when he hit the tombstone and Lesnar kicked out. I turned to my buddy and I go, this is the problem with doing the false finishes every year, is that we don't believe them anymore.
Right.
And then we started talking about that, and then he hit the F5, and then, well, there we are.
Well, and there's a bunch of other questions I have for you guys here. But Aaron, just quickly, was this, in your eyes, the biggest upset win in Mania history, the most shocking win?
I think this is maybe the most shocking surprise they've ever had. Never mind just upset. Absolutely right. Upset. But like, these guys never deliver that shocking surprise. And this just like floored everyone.
I mean, the only one I could think was close in my mind, in my eyes, was Bret and Owen. But even that, I think a lot of people, if you were in the know, kind of knew Owen was going to win.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at the time. I remember being floored when Owen won. But this is way beyond that.
Well, yeah, and this has so much more value to it, too, right? Like, there's a whole brand built around the streak.
It was a surprise. It was ballsy. It was pretty crazy. You saw a lot of the stories out there today. I think people wanting to believe it was a shoot, wanting to believe they fucked up, that they didn't mean to do it. But, yeah, there were a lot of people angry at WWE for picking Brock Lesnar. But I think at the end of the day, it was The Undertaker's choice. There was rumors 4 years ago he wanted Brock Lesnar to be the one to end the streak, and they decided against it. And I think Brock Lesnar's a friend of his. I thought he thought it was the right choice. And I think it's clear, if you watch that match, he is done. I don't think he had another match in him. My guess is they left it up to him, and they said, come to us and at the, you know, right before the day and tell us what you want to do. And I'm thinking he went through all the training, all the preparation, and the build-up to this match, some of the abuse he took, and I think he realized he just couldn't do it anymore. And he was never a guy that was going to go out with a retirement tour or a big ceremony. I think this is the way he's going to go out, and I don't think we'll even see him tonight or again for a long while. I think that's his way of going out, putting over a guy and the streak and walk out. What did you think, Scott, of this being? Do you feel this is the last match, or do you think he'll wrestle again?
No, I think he's done. I think he's done. I don't think a Taker Cena match would even matter. I don't think it would even matter at this point. Taker's last. Well, when did he start just going? 2011, I guess. The first one with Triple H was probably the first one where he was coming back yearly, because 2010 was when he was feuding with Kane over the world title. Right. So it was really 2011 was the first year where he was. It was just him, and the whole storyline was Taker beat the shit out of him, and it took a year to get back. And it's been the same ever since.
Right. So was he gone from after Shawn through? I thought he feuded with Kane in 09, wasn't it?
No, it was 10.
Okay.
No, it was 10.
Okay. He was around because
it was the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
Right.
2009, okay. He beat Punk.
That's right.
2010, because Kane won Money in the Bank the same year that Miz won Money in the Bank.
I'm on board. We're good. We don't have to go there.
All right. So anyway, then 2011 is when he started going only yearly. So it's only been the last three years that it's been a – and I think it's because he realized that he's no spring chicken anymore, and you could just see the age this year more than any – even more than last year.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be Sean. Not everybody's going to be Hunter. That'll not protect him, but pace themselves for him. The match last night was bowling shoe ugly.
It was not good.
Nope.
And I don't know how many more.
Probably his worst since Henry, right?
Yeah, easily his worst match since Mark Henry at 22. And now you're at the point where I think a lot of these guys don't yet know. When they have to do the protecting, I don't think they're experienced enough to do that.
Well, I don't think that's rational with Brock Lesnar. I think he can protect the guy. I think he's a fine worker. My thought was that Brock had to completely slow himself down for Taker. He couldn't work a Brock Lesnar match, and that's why it sucked. Because he wasn't going to beat him up too bad. And if you're going to have a Brock match where it's slow pace, you're going to do like Big Show with the Rumble, where he just pummels the shit out of him with a weapon. And they weren't going to do that here. So the other style is what he did with Cena and Punk, and to an extent Triple H, where it's a lot of quick paced, a lot of frantic movements and big spots. And we didn't get a ton of those. The Tombstone is maybe the worst I've seen since he tombstoned Jake Roberts on the floor or somebody ate.
Brock's head was like a foot off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Dunn did his best to cut at the right time and cover it, and they couldn't, because it was really obvious and really bad. And at that moment, to me, was it the final trigger pulled in my head that, you know what, this guy, he can't keep doing this. And as much as you want to see him and Cena, a match that was left on the table that they didn't get to do again on a big stage, I don't know how good it would even be even a year from now. I think this is a guy that just needs to hang it up. I think he's done his part. He's done a lot. And Aaron, I want your take on this. Dan McGinn kept saying, hey, now they don't have the crutch of the streak anymore. They don't need to shoehorn it into Mania. And there's been Manias that have been carried by the streak match. But do you agree with that? Do you feel like it was getting to be a crutch where they had to find a reason to have a match, find a guy? It almost felt like, all right, who's the Taker match this time? And now they're kind of freed of that.
Yeah, I think that's actually bang on. I think, yeah, and you're that's exactly right, because last year's match was just shoehorned in completely.
Right.
This year's match was too. I think there might be, because you were saying before, Scott, that like you don't see what a Cena Undertaker match could mean. Now I don't think he can go anymore, but I think there's some value in. There's a storyline I've always wanted them to do, and I don't know if Undertaker can carry it, but I've always wanted to see the older legend trying to have one more run, almost like a Rocky kind of thing.
I don't like that with Taker though.
So, but I think,
I don't
now
think that
fits
with Taker.
But I think now that he's been beaten, it can fit. I think before it wouldn't, but now it can. I'm not saying that's what I want to see. Like I really wanted to see Cena and Taker for the streak. But now that it's off the table, I think it's either one last run or he's done. And I'm leaning more towards he's done.
I can't see him coming back.
No, because he looked in pain the whole match.
I mean, plus the only thing he had going was the streak. Like, to me, if that's gone, what else is he going to do? He's already done everything. So the one thing he had was that he had never lost at Mania. So if he comes back and fights next year, it's going to kind of be like, all right, well, okay.
1-0 to start again.
Right. It kind of feel like this is the way to go out if you're going to go out. I don't see him coming back to do anything besides a Hall of Fame and like Legends things here and there, which I think even that will be a while. I think he's done. So one thing we haven't discussed yet, and we need to get to now, Scott, was Brock Lesnar the right choice?
Why don't we call Dr. G and ask him?
He was not happy. Roger was laughing again today about how G was so adamant about he was there to watch Brock go down and take her, kill him.
That's right. Roger would be disappointed about a half hour later. Right. So.
But it seemed like a lock. You know what I mean? Like, this was. Yeah. I mean, if there's anything that seemed like a lock, this was a lock.
Yeah. To be determined. I'm gonna be a diplomat about it. I'm not happy either. I just think Brock is a douche. But look, I agree with and when I calmed him down, the doctor did say, you know, if he's going to be around and you're going to use this, and JR, you and I have talked about this since we've known each other, and of course on this show, if you're going to have somebody break it, use it.
Right.
And whether it was Kane, they all used to talk about Orton back at 21. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a good idea because Orton's been able to forge his career without it.
Right.
What are you going to do with it? Is he just going to vanish, come back for some SummerSlam feud? No, that's horse shit. All right. He's got to be around all the time now. And I don't think he'll
be full time. But go ahead.
I don't think they have a choice. Well, I guess they have a choice. But
he could be on. Just, he doesn't have to be full time for it to work.
I think this eventually leads to him winning the title.
Oh, of course. I mean, it has to be what it had is for him to wreck Bryan and win the title and head to Mania next year as champion. But he, you know, I was always of the idea that it shouldn't be an established guy, that it should be a young guy that could really use it.
Mm.
And I've kind of turned around on that.
Mm, me too.
I always thought a young guy, it could make his career. And then I thought about it last night and I'm like, well, you know, they probably wouldn't. They probably, it almost would become an anchor around a guy. Like, if you had Bray Wyatt do it, or you had one of these young Barrett or something, you know, if you had a young guy do it, or in a 21, it becomes such an albatross, the guy who ended the Undertaker streak. And the weight of making him a superstar, I think, would have been too much. And I'll admit to have been wrong on this for years, because I always felt like if you're going to do it, like, I laughed at the people who thought Shawn may do it. Because I'm like, why would you have Shawn do it? Like, what's the point of that? Yeah. But the more I thought about it, a guy like Brock, he can make it work because we know he can make it work. He's a great wrestler. He's a star. He's a draw. He's a guy that has the ability to take something this grave on and still not be drowned by it.
Yeah, and if I could piggyback on that, like I was with you too, like because like I always thought I was a guy too, but I think the fact that it was Brock and nobody expected him to win helped create that moment where he won. From the time he won until the Undertaker probably left, I think is one of the greatest moments they've ever produced, with the shock and the audience reaction and the way they played it so underplayed. Like, they played it like they never have restraint with these things, right? But they played it like no one knew what the hell was going on.
Right.
Right, so the audience was shocked. The commentators were shocked.
No music right away.
No music was brilliant, and that there's that wide shot with the 21-0, which everything was just so perfect. And that moment of the streak ending, I think, is a stronger moment than they could have ever achieved with Undertaker continuing the streak. Like, we would have never had that moment, and that moment is amazing.
I mean, I was always someone too, and you know, I'm being a bit hypocritical because I've always sat here and said I thought there was more money in keeping the streak going. Guys could chase it. You can make DVDs and merchandise and blah, blah, blah. And then I saw it happen, and I'm like, well, all right. Maybe it was worth it. Like, you're right. Maybe there would never have been the ability to have a moment like that if you kept the thing going. My thought of keeping it going was that this guy could come back 3 years from now and maybe have a match, pull it out of mothballs if you wanted to do a big match. Now that's gone. Now it's done. It's official. Yeah. You can't turn that page again. You can still have guys try and chase it, try and beat 21 if you want, some young guy coming up. But yeah, I'm turned around that I'm okay with Brock being the guy. There's a lot of anger out there about Brock being the choice, but he's a guy that can make money off of this. We know he can make money. And I think they'll build him right already tonight. I didn't hear the promo, but from what I'm reading, him and Heyman, Heyman cut an awesome promo. And I think Heyman's a big part of this too, this whole package.
Did you see the shirt he was wearing?
What was it? The
Eat, Sleep, Conquer, Break the Streak.
Yes. Well, he had that going into last night, right?
Oh, I didn't even see that. I missed that.
Yeah, that shirt's been on a couple weeks.
And that promo last night before the match was awesome too, the video package. With Heyman doing the narrating over the thing about, and he kept saying that Eat, Sleep, Beat the Streak over and over, and they kept showing the clips. I thought that was an awesome video package. And and did you notice too, no bell for like 2 minutes after the match, they finally rang it because everyone was just shocked.
There was nothing. It was exactly, I mean, the end of that match was almost exactly like the end of Warrior, like Slaughter. Like nobody knew what the fuck was going on.
No, but that even, Warrior Slaughter had, that had like a buzz still. That was like booing and the horn going. I don't know. That there was still. I've never seen anything like this. This was
so much. Yeah, so
dead
much
silence.
Yeah.
This was just like. You could see Warrior losing when it happened. When he bashed him with the scepter, like you could cut and he drops the elbow. Like you could kind of see it coming. Mm. This even after that third F5, I don't think anybody. We sat there and said, wait, is he going to kick out of it? We never thought he's not kicking out. We said, is he really going to bury Brock's finisher and kick out a third time, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I leaned back on my chair like, all right, how much longer is this match?
You know, it was mind-blowing. I'm still shocked that they pulled the trigger and did it.
I'm in a lot of ways happy they did though, because we always criticize them for not taking enough risks.
Right.
And this is a huge risk.
Yeah.
Massive.
I mean, I saw some people saying they were never going to watch wrestling again because, I mean, I couldn't – I don't know. I saw people on Graham Cawthon's Facebook page saying that they were done with the WWF because of this. And I get – you know, if Daniel Bryan had lost last night, that's like the future direction of the company. That's an attitude within the company that's not going to change if he lost last night. Then I could see you saying you're giving up, but – I mean, who in their right mind really was so clinging to the Taker streak that they're not going to watch wrestling again? I mean, he's not coming back anyway. You know, he's done pretty much. He was done. Can you be upset that Brock was the guy? Do you think he should have retired undefeated? Yes. Is it a reason to quit watching? I don't know.
And he didn't even
have... That's been a little melodramatic. It really is.
Yeah, and he didn't even have any, like, there weren't really any more matches for him to have short of Cena.
I think Cena's the one they really left on the table.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite pictures from today was the one of is a picture of Sting. And the writing on it says Sting versus Undertaker, WrestleMania 31. And then underneath it, it has Bad News Barrett saying, well, sorry, I've got some bad news for you.
I've got some bad news. He's awesome.
Yeah, so that obviously is gone too. But I think Cena is a really money one they lost out on.
Yeah, because that would have been that would have been a main event. Like, you couldn't have put anything higher than that on a card.
I agree. Definitely main event.
I mean, I think the chance they had to do it was last year. Like, I don't think we needed Rock Cena again, and I don't think we needed Taker Punk. I think last year was the year we should have gotten Cena Taker.
Yeah, and I think it should have been Cena Taker and Punk Rock.
Yeah.
Like, that whole year would have been helped, I think, if...
I think Punk Rock, third straight pay-per-view?
No, but that's the thing.
No, you don't do it in the Chamber.
You put Rock in the Rumble instead of...
Oh, I see.
I think the year would have been...
Okay.
Yeah, because I think, like, as soon as they announced that the... I mean, we're getting off topic here, but as soon as they announced The Rock was getting a title shot at Royal Rumble, it set everything in stone forever, whereas if you make him win it, there's a few more possibilities. Anyway, blah, 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 blah.
All right, any more thoughts on this one? Any more takes? Anything we missed? Any angle of it we missed?
I will. There's the only problem I had with the match. I mean, aside from
besides
the match
sucking,
itself, besides the match sucking, I thought the commentary hurt a lot of it too. I know I've said this a few times. There's points where they just go quiet during the match, almost like they're bored watching it. And I feel that if they had not done that in the match, it would have been so much more effective if they would have. When they do it at the end. You get what I mean? Like, I can't stand the, like, oh my God, King, what's take? Like, it drops down a notch and it just, that's when they should be – when a match slows down like that, that's when they should be at their most exciting, trying to explain things. And I just feel it hurts the match when they do that. And I felt that match – I think JR, not you, the other one, put up a tweet where it was like the wrestlers make the music, but the commentators write the lyrics. And I kind of feel like that was a shot at the commentary. Like it just – that I think it didn't help the match in any way.
Right. And I think they did a great job post-match.
Absolutely. I just think it would have been even stronger if they had done a better job in the actual match.
Yeah. And that match, again, not very good in the bottom tier of Taker's Mania matches. And it was clear. You know, we were saying it before he even lost that he was not looking good.
No.
Do you guys think he shows up on Raw or anything like that? Or do you think he's...
I thought he was going to, but... I'm leaning more towards no.
I don't feel like it's his style to come out and be honored or anything like, or announce a retirement. I think he just goes. I think he's even said that in the past, that when he goes, he's just going to go. Like, that's the Taker mystique. He came in out of nowhere, and he just disappears into nowhere.
Well, and you notice the way he walked up the ramp, too, when he left is just so typical of him.
Right, and like, he didn't put the fist up, though.
No.
Remember, he always puts the fist up at the end.
Yeah, not tonight. I remember a couple years ago when Triple H got beat by Lesnar, and remember that milking at the end of the SummerSlam? The SummerSlam, I sound like Bret Hart. But like he's milking. Yeah. The SummerSlam! He just milked and looked at the audience almost waiting for the chant. Like, such a difference between Taker just walking out.
Well, what did you think of them not doing? It didn't seem like he got much of the standing ovation. Do you think it's just because of the pure shock in the arena?
Oh, yeah.
Because it seemed like they were going for that moment where he was standing alone looking around like they were waiting for the big standing O to come, and it never really came. And I do think it's because of the pure shock in the arena that no one knew what the fuck to do, you know?
I'm sure people were still thinking that they were going to restart the match.
I kept waiting for it, too. I don't know how they were going to figure it out or how they were going to pull it off, but I was waiting for it, too.
And I was hoping it wouldn't happen because I'm like, oh, if they restart it, this kills the streak just as dead, right? It makes it even worse.
So, kind of surprising, actually. The Ultimate Warrior is going to be on tonight. He's coming up next after this commercial.
He's challenging Taker.
I want a new streak!
You buried me, I'm going to bury you.
So, we'll see what they do with Brock. We'll see how they carry it on. I mean, he was on tonight. And, you know, he's a guy, too. Everyone says he's a part-timer, only signed through next year. He's a guy that's got a lot of miles left on the tires. Like, he's a guy that can be around for years and years and years in this role. And is it the worst thing that he's only on a handful of pay-per-views? I mean, doesn't that make him the special attraction? Like, do you think we'd get done with Brock if he was a weekly guy wrestling every month again?
It would make him less special. Like, I'm kind of hoping that they do a bit to rehab him, because I found they've kind of lost a little bit of his mystique since he's come back.
Well, don't forget, too, though, because he has won his last three matches, thankfully. So since he lost to Mania last year to Triple H, he beat Triple H, beat Punk, beat Big Show. So he seems to be at least back on a winning streak.
Four in a row now.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, four in a row now. I think he's a guy that it makes him feel like a big fight guy by only being on a few times a year. It's a big deal when he shows up. It's going to be a big match, and it adds to him. He's got the MMA shorts and the look and the attitude. It almost feels like a guy that he has his four matches a year, and that's it. That's all he can do because his matches are so brutal. He can't go every month. He can't go every week. And I think he can still make the streak count as long as he's not gone after next year's Mania. If he re-ups and re-ups and re-ups and does three or four matches a year, I think it's going to be worth it in the end.
Yeah, and I think even you could run with him as champion wrestling like two or three pay-per-views in a row.
Right. I think he will win. He has to defend the belt. I think he'll win.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think he'll win between Survivor Series and Rumble, and I think he heads into Mania as champion next year.
Hmm.
I think that might have been the prerequisite or the parameters of this deal. They probably told Brock, look, you want this. Taker's going to give this to you. I need you to be – we're going to have to restructure, and you need to be around more.
Yeah,
none of this,
I mean, you're right.
None of this, hey, I beat Taker. I'll see you in July.
No, you're right. It absolutely could be that he's going to show up more often than he did.
I agree with you, JR. I'm not saying monthly. I mean, Dr. G is going to expect him to be there every single main event and superstars. And no, not that far. But we need more than just, all right, July to in August, January, and then March, and no, we need more than that. But we don't need every month.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do something with this.
Well, yeah, I think he'll probably be at Extreme Rules would be my guess, and then he'll go for the summer again until SummerSlam. That would be my guess.
He beats Brian there.
Yeah. No, my only question is where that leaves Batista. Because I'm out. Really, I was really
hopefully out.
Well, yeah, but I really thought he was going to be champion at some point when this movie comes out. I really thought he'd be the one that beats Brian at SummerSlam as a heel. So I'll be curious what they do with him if they're going to completely now eschew his title reign and just put Brock in his place. It'll be very interesting to see where they go with that. So all right, let's move on. We have the Divas match next. I feel bad for them, stuck in a no-win spot here. AJ won the Battle Royal, the Invitational, with Oksana, Alicia, Brie, Cameron, Emma, Eva, Layla, Natalia, Nikki, Rosa, Summer Rae, and Tamina. AJ Lee won. Not too much of a surprise there overall. But she keeps her title, so no Punk punishment as part of that. I don't think we have anything related to mention here, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Nah. I'm just glad AJ won.
All right, so backstage, we then got one of my favorite moments of the night. Mean Gene interviewed Hulk Hogan, and Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper showed up, and they start bitching about WrestleMania 1, and Orndorff says, you know, everyone comes at me every day and talks about how I blew that match, and then Mr. T shows up, and Hogan says it's time to bury the hatchet, and they all shake hands, and Piper's reaction to shaking T's hand was awesome, and then he collapses into him and hugs him.
Yeah,
because he's so fucking upset about it. I thought this was an awesome moment, and this was a suitable replacement for them not doing, thankfully, the rumored rematch of WrestleMania 1 that there were rumors they may do.
Oh good God.
I think this was a fine, suitable replacement to get these guys out there. I thought it was important to have them out there, and it was cool that they did it.
It was perfect.
Yeah, there's nothing more to say. It was the right way to do it, and they did it perfectly.
I feel, though, that Paul Orndorff should have been wearing a cowboy hat.
Yes.
And should be part of the movie Tombstone with Kurt Russell.
Well, he had when I had my picture done with the Heenan family back in the fall, and I met Orndorff, he actually had a beard. He had like one of these little goatee kind of things to go with that big mustache. So he shaved that part for last night. But when I saw him in October, he did actually kind of have almost a full goatee type beard.
So. Yeah, and how good was Pat Patterson?
Yeah, that was great too. Yeah,
yes. Yeah. Back in the old shirt and bow tie.
Were you surprised Orton wasn't with them? I mean, he was there the night before at Hall of Fame.
Mm.
Yeah, Orton and Snuka
could have got Snuka.
Well, I don't think they're touching Snuka right now.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Dig up Liberace. Yeah. Get Liberace out there.
He's dead.
That's why I said dig him up.
He's still dead.
You can put his bones on camera.
Ugh, you're such a Canadian. it was a good moment. Where's Ali? it was a good moment, though. It was a good moment.
Too soon. Too soon, Scott, on the Ali jokes.
So Warrior's actually in the ring. He came out, shook the ropes. He walked out, didn't run. And now he's putting an Ultimate Warrior face paint mask on.
I thought it would be great if he came out with his – when they did the Hall of Fame, when he came out with face paint. That would have been really cool, they're kind of making up for it now.
I was kind of hoping they'd do like the Hall of Fame, like at WrestleMania in the ring, and he could come out and run.
as the Ultimate Warrior. He said, "Shut up, Warrior. Let me do the talking." Now he's becoming the Ultimate Warrior.
That's funny.
So interesting. All right. So main event time: Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton versus Batista. 23 minutes. A great, great match. They threw everything in the kitchen sink out there. They did the nasty spot on the table where Batista powerbombed Bryan and Orton caught him and put him with an RKO through the table. Orton landed with back first on a TV monitor in a nasty bump, ended up cutting his back open. And I don't know if he didn't blow his back out on that one. I thought for sure he was fucked the way he was. It looked like he was spasming and having a really hard time. Aaron, how nasty was that shot?
Crazy. Like right away you saw him land on that monitor. Like, and it looked amazing too. And right away I was like, oh my God, I hope Brian's not injured. I hope none of them are injured because this needs to finish well.
Mm-hmm. And they had Triple H and Stephanie came out kind of early in the match and they got that out of the way. Triple H got whacked with the sledgehammer. Stephanie got her physical payback, which we weren't sure she would ever get. Brian dove through the ropes onto all of them and took her out. And Scott, we were talking about this last night about how it was kind of shrewd to get them out of the way early. And Brad made a good point saying, well, we don't want to be waiting for them. We don't want the fans waiting for them to show up. So let's do it now. And we also don't want it to indirectly lead to the fall, which I'm a big fan of not doing. I want Brian to win as clean as possible. So having them come out early, you pay off the storyline and get them out of there and get back to the match. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think it had to be done that way. And because you wanted like the last 6 or 7 minutes to be a really good heat segment. and really go down the home stretch, and they did that. No, they did that very well. I agree with that.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was as well as they could have done it.
Match continued from there. We had the great, great near fall when Batista speared into Bryan. He fell out of the ring. Orton hit Batista with the RKO, and to me, that near fall may have been the best thing Batista's done since he came back to the promotion. Because I think everyone, we all bit on it completely. And after what happened with Taker, I don't think anyone was counting out that they may do something fucking insane and have like Orton retain the title. Did you bite on that one, Aaron?
Oh yeah, that was the best near fall of the night by far.
That was just fantastic. And Scott, I remember we were just like, oh my God, that would have been. And then Batista got one on Orton too a few minutes later. Not as dramatic as the Orton one, but just enough to make you nervous, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, Batista was like channeling Kurt Angle on that one.
Yeah, he waited until the last possible second.
Yeah.
So then in the final moments, Bryan ended up putting Batista in the Yes Lock, and Batista tapped out. Daniel Bryan became your world champion, paying off this long, lengthy storyline journey we've been on since SummerSlam. Crowd was going insane. The great celebration, the confetti, and the moment of 30, and a nice linear story that we've fed through 10 with Bret Hart, the ceremony of him, 20 Chris Benoit, and then 30 Daniel Bryan. All very similar guys, similar style, similar underdog stories. And it's kind of funny how their time has always seemed to come up on these anniversary manias. So kind of neat. Were you surprised, Scott, that Batista's the one who took the fall?
You know, I was back and forth on it, but the answer for me is no, because I think, maybe a little bit, because you could have conceivably just ended the Bryan Orton saga. But instead, I feel like they probably wanted to milk it a little longer and go, well, you didn't pin me and I'm enacting my rematch clause. And I think they just wanted to get the Batista portion of the title thing out of the way. Like, all right, you won the Rumble, but you lost, so tough shit. I think that's what it was. And I think they can get a little more mileage with Orton.
Yeah, but we've already
if he's not
seen
crippled.
I feel like we've seen Orton Bryan a lot. To me, you'd rather finish off the... I think what you're saying is completely backwards, because why would you want to blow off the fresher feud? To me, you want to blow off Orton Bryan. That's the one we've seen a million times. That's the one that needed to be put to bed. And Orton should have lost, and then Batista can say, well, I still haven't really gotten my title match from the Rumble. I haven't been pinned.
Mm, that's true.
Or submitted. Yeah. And then you can build towards that feud. To me, the Orton thing is the one that should have ended. Do you agree, Aaron?
I think I agree. I agree that I'm surprised he beat Batista. However, it does give you the interesting thing, I don't know if they're going for this, that now, by the end of the night, he's beaten all three of them. Like, he beat Triple H in the opener, he knocked out Orton with the knee before he tapped out Batista. I don't know if that's what they're going for, and if they're moving on from that group, it would make sense, but yes, I was surprised they tapped out Batista.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Was the win in the moment worth everything we've been through to this point?
Yes. Yeah. All the confetti and the fireworks and
going over
him
strong.
His moment.
No bullshit. And he went over strong. No bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. He won it, and that was that.
I say almost no. Like, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think they lost something in the build. It's funny because I'm a bit of a hypocrite with this, because with the Brock Lesnar Undertaker match, for me, it was all about that moment, right? Like, no matter what the build was, that moment was strong enough. And I think for me anyway, I got tired, and I was very happy when he won, and I love Daniel Bryan, and I was happy in it. It was good. But I think there was something missing for me because the build was so all over the place.
Right.
Like, it for me, this is an awful thing, but I always look at how things could have been as opposed to how they are. And it's not that I'm not happy with what we got, because they changed because that's what the fans wanted, and that's admirable.
That's my next question. Do you think this was the plan?
No, I can't imagine it was, because the story doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm. Like, and it gives this, they don't usually plan these things out that far in advance. Like, I just think there was a stronger way to screw Daniel Bryan, make everybody look stronger, and have him triumphant at the end. And again, not to say I'm not happy he won, but I think there was just something missing from that celebration for me.
Do you think they envisioned him being their Mick Foley back in the fall? the guy that was going to get them to the bridge to Mania?
Yeah. Like, I think when he beat Cena, I think that was like, okay, we've made him forever kind of thing. But then they spent a lot of time almost deconstructing him in the fall, which tells me that they probably didn't have the big plans for him at WrestleMania. Like, I think maybe, like, I mean, there was a rumor that he was going to fight Sheamus, right? I think that was the big rumor.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that if Punk had stayed, I think that might have been what we would have gotten.
I mean, it's like, crazy to think that Punk leaving is what led to this.
Yeah, but I
still feel like if Punk stayed, we would have gotten Brian in the main event. We just wouldn't have gotten Brian Triple H. I think we would have gotten Punk Triple H. But I think they would have had to put Brian in the main event. I think they would have realized there's no possible way they could have Batista walk out as champion.
Oh, yeah. Once they heard the Batista reactions, I think there was no possible way. I think it's because of the Batista reactions we got what we wanted. But there's no way. I think they thought, and again, I could be wrong, but I think they thought that Batista would come back. He'd be huge over. We'd be dying for him to beat Orton. And that didn't quite happen.
Well, it was bad timing. Like, I don't think the fans wanted to hate Batista. I just think it was the brunt of him winning the Rumble and Bryan not even being in it. I think that's what started this groundswell that Batista couldn't recover from. Do you agree, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, there's some discussions or there's some stories either both on No DQ's website or even Wrestle Chat that Batista told them when he was coming in, look, guys, I don't think a babyface return is good. I think I should come in already as a heel, kind of bring back my 2000. No, and then they were told, no, the big return for you. But, and they're like, no, it's not going to happen. And he was right. So if the original plan, here's a question then. If the original plan, then let's go back pre-Daniel Bryan. If the original plan was Batista ending with the win, you certainly weren't going to have Brock beat Taker. Boy, the place would have fucking sunk in the ocean. Or the Gulf, I guess. So obviously, that wasn't the original plan for that match. So I think Daniel Bryan winning kind of softened the blow and I think told Taker, you know, we could probably get away with this.
Well, I think too, like Batista, I don't know if Batista's as big a star as they were making him out to be.
I think he is big. Within the company, though. Like, I really think if he came back in, like, August or July, or I don't think any of this would have happened with him. I really don't. I mean, people may have turned, like, internet fans a little bit may have turned because his, you know, wasn't great in the ring. But if they protected him in the ring and they did this, like, I just think he came back at the – if he even came back a year earlier – I think he would have been fine. I just think he came back at the one possible time that was the absolute worst time for him to come back.
Yeah, I agree with you. The timing is bad. But like, would you say he's a bigger star than, say, like Chris Jericho?
I think his return was, because Jericho's returned so many damn times.
Yeah, maybe. Because I'm trying to imagine, like, if Jericho would have won the Rumble and been the top face and, you know, gone on, I wouldn't be able to see it, you know?
I can't think of anyone that wouldn't have. I think even if Punk won the Rumble and went on to Mania, I still think even we would have gotten a lot of Daniel Bryan. I just think this was an unstoppable train at this point from the Rumble till now. I don't think anybody could have stepped in. I think the only guy that could have maybe won the Rumble that night and not get booted out of the building was Roman Reigns, because the fans got crazy behind him and were so anti-Batista by the time that match was winding down. Yeah. I think maybe Reigns would have been okay.
Was that a pro Reigns or an anti-Batista, though?
I think it was a little bit of both, because everyone was pretty digging
Definitely
Reigns.
A little bit of both.
So let me ask you one last thing. If Bryan had won the Rumble, would that have taken away from this moment a little bit? Of him finally winning this match?
Well, we wouldn't have gotten the cool Occupy Raw moment on Raw, which was pretty cool. You would have got a great moment in Pittsburgh.
It would have been great, but I can't help but feel maybe it would have distracted from this just a little bit. Like, this blue-balling of the fans that has been killing everyone.
I think with the way they set it up in the fall, it would have taken away. But I think there's a way they could have done it, which would have made it even bigger.
I wonder what would have happened at the chamber then. Well, I guess Brian.
Well, my thought along is that we should have gotten Brian Triple H in the chamber at the chamber.
Yeah, that's what it would have been. And then Wharton would have just defended it and stuck somebody else there.
That's what I thought they were going to do all along.
I mean, I would have... If the storyline had been stronger, too, you could have even done Bryan and Triple H could have been a bigger deal even without the title if the storyline was well established and you had someone else on a proper level to challenge for the title. Like, I think you could have gotten away with if Punk had stayed around and Bryan gets his revenge on Triple H at the show. You could have gotten away with that, I think. But it wouldn't have been as effective as this.
Not to swerve topics too much, but Paige has made her Raw debut, confronting AJ Lee here on Raw.
Excellent. I love Paige.
All right, so let's look at this thing as a whole, guys. You've had a night to sleep on it. I'm sure it'll take a couple rewatches. Last night here, we rewatched The Undertaker through the main event. Right afterwards, it was up on the network. What did you feel the legacy of this show is? Where does it rank to you on the all-time greats list? I think when it comes to moments, it's probably in the very, very top few. I think total package, probably just right around the top 5, 6, 7 area maybe. And not maybe a 6-7, but 6-7 rankings. Only because I feel like there was no... The opener was very, really, really, really good. And the main event was a lot of fun. I feel like nothing in the middle was great, match-wise. Now, we had tons of moments, awesome, memorable stuff. A lot of really cool things in here. So I think the whole package as a spectacle, as a tightly run, round ball of mania with some very good matches and superstar moments is 5th or 6th. If you're looking just moments and how memorable it was, it's probably top couple. But to me, it didn't have that one big match of the year candidate.
No, it didn't. Yeah. No, it didn't. But good to watch, and I mean, look, Brock winning is going to be one of the most memorable moments ever.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is what I think. Did Dan ask? Someone asked this last night on the couch, Scott. I want your take on the Aaron's. If Undertaker wins that match, or maybe it was Chad who asked on the phone. If Undertaker wins that match, how do you feel? Is this mania still looked at as insane, as huge as it was?
Probably not.
No.
The same exact match, but Taker wins.
No, nah. In fact, it's hurt by it, because like it's funny because you're just saying like there's not that 5-star match, but there's a flip side to that in that like there's nothing bad,
right? Like, definitely not.
Yeah, but almost every other WrestleMania has something bad.
Yeah, but see, like, I look at it almost, and we're gonna talk about this Wednesday. Like 18 was a show kind of like this, where a lot of very good matches, an all-time moment, and nothing bad. And I don't think I don't think 18 is better than this, or I don't think they're even tied. But to me, it was that sort of show. We're no match of the year candidate, but an all-time classic moment, and then nothing bad. And I think that says something, because there's a lot of bad Mania matches out there.
Yeah. But you see, I think if Undertaker had won, that you would have your bad moment then.
Right.
Because I think we forgive the quality of that match because the ending was so memorable. Like at our table, when we were watching it, we have a buddy who doesn't watch – he doesn't watch as religiously as us, and he turns to us and he goes, did that moment make up for the boring match? And without a second of doubt, we were both like, yep. Like,
so absolutely. My question is, does that make it a great Mania if that one moment, that one decision is the swing between it? I mean, I guess you can't discount it.
No, because Brad and Chad were doing that list, you guys were talking about, like, does one match do it
right.
a lot, right? Like, where do you put WrestleMania 13, right? Where does it go? Does it go here? Does it go there? But, like, this has – for me, it had, like 4 markout moments. And I'm a grown-ass man, you know what I mean? Like, I shouldn't be pumping my fists in the air when Cesaro body slams the Big Show out of the ring. But I am. And to elicit that emotional reaction, it makes it special. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. And for me, that puts it clearly top 5. Because, I mean, even like the opener, is, like if you're going to rate stars, the opener is what, like 4, 4.5? Maybe closing.
Yeah, I'd say around 4. I have to watch it again. I have to price it, watch it again. It was around there. Yeah. I mean, it was close.
The main is about 4 maybe, like – like it's just, everything is so consistent, and we talked a bit about the pace. I thought the pace was great. Like there wasn't any lulls. It just moved. The show moved, which is something I haven't felt in a long time with WrestleMania. Like, this is the first one in a while where I leave and I'm very happy. And it's not because of the results. It's just because we got a good show.
I think the show is memorable for the moment, but I really think it's take or losing. I really do. Daniel Bryan's moment last night is historically, taking away what happened in real life, really is no different than Benoit winning in at WrestleMania 20. And that show had a lot of stuff in it. Now, was anything else memorable that night? No.
But I think it is very different than Benoit winning. Because, like, Benoit winning, look, it was great and we all wanted it, but there wasn't the groundswell for Benoit. No.
I disagree.
Yeah, I'm with Scott, I think there was a groundswell for Benoit.
Think it was confined to the internet because the internet fan base hadn't exploded to what it is today.
Right.
But that's it. But to me, that adds to the experience, right? Like, not that people weren't happy when he won, but this whole movement that came with it and the rabidness of the crowd, for me, that's just as important a part of the show. But then again, you guys were there live, right, for the Benoit win?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you have a different perspective on how that crowd was. But from a live perspective, this one seemed much more crazy.
We were awesome.
I can't judge because I wasn't there last night, but it was pretty crazy for Benoit. I mean, I think time has forgotten that over the last 10 years because of what's happened, and we're not allowed to really look back as fondly upon it anymore, I guess. But the groundswell for that, it was really big at the time. I mean, I don't know if it was as pronounced as it was here, but to me the difference is Benoit's felt more almost like a cherry on top of an awesome career Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like they hit Benoit 2 years too late or 3 years too late. And it was, like, too late for him to become – it almost felt like RVD in 06. Like, fuck, where was this 4 years ago? Like it almost felt like, oh, it's great now, and he's going to have really great matches, and he finally did it. But it almost felt like a lifetime achievement title. Whereas Brian is getting it in a position where he can really still affect the business. He can become a serious superstar. I don't think Benoit stood a chance of becoming a superstar on the potential that Brian has in 2004.
Yeah, that's a fair – that's a very good point.
Mm, true. But we're talking about, in a bubble, WrestleMania moments. And I think they're both very equal. And I don't think Bryan alone winning makes this a top five WrestleMania. Maybe a top 10.
No, I agree with you there.
Not a top
I think
five.
Without the streak ending, it would have sunk down definitely towards maybe the 9, 10, 11 spot. Instead, we're up around the 4, 5, 6 spot. I mean, like, where do you compare it? And I don't want to get too far into this, but where do you compare it to, like, a show like 10? You know, they had 2 5-star all-time classic matches and a very memorable title win by Bret Hart. Not the loaded top-to-bottom card as much. You had a lot of kind of fluff in between, but, you know, what are the main it gives you to 2 matches that 10 gives you?
Well, you'd have to – I mean, it's all time and perspective too, right? Like – but, like, for me, this one had many more memorable moments. Because we're talking about Bryan and Undertaker, but there was a lot. There's Bryan beating Triple H. There's the 3 biggest stars ever in the ring at the start. There's the crowd, and Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper in that match were incredible. Like, Luke Harper on the outside with his looks of devotion, and just that whole package was amazing. The Battle Royal being way better than it had any right to be. Like, there was just a lot of really kind of – there's a lot of moments they can use from this show that on their WrestleMania highlights forever.
So where do you look at this? I mean, are you looking at this behind like 17 and 19?
I don't know, because I'm weird because I have 22 up high. I have 8 up high because I love that Flair Savage match. But right now it's probably 3-4, I think. Like, I like 10, but I find 10 there's a lot of filler. Like, you're right. It doesn't have the 5-star matches, but See, I'm a big mark for crowds, too, and crowd reactions. And to me, like, those things matter.
Well, I thought the crowd of 10 was very good. I mean, they were – and you know, Luger-Yoko was kind of a weird match, but the crowd was super into that match and the bullshit chants at the end. And I think the crowd at 10 gets kind of overlooked sometimes because they were great throughout that whole show.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they were a hot crowd, but they're not – again, maybe it's just a sign of the times, right? But I like the crowd singing. he's got the whole world in his hands.
Well, yeah,
you know?
it's different. I mean,
it's a sign of the times, right?
It's tough to rank those on moments. It is. I mean, you got to look at the positives and negatives of each show. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, Brad, Chad, and I spent 2 hours doing it, and I don't think we'd recreate the same list if we did it again next week.
No,
you know,
I do love that you had the 19 in the discussion for number one, though.
I think you have to. I really do. I mean, just by match quality alone, I think you can definitely make the argument.
Mm-hmm.
But one last note on Raw before we sign off here. Paige with the mega push survived the Black Widow and pinned AJ to become the new Divas champion. So,
wow.
Paige with a mega push out of the gate and definitely presented like a star. So we'll see where they go with that. But I'm going to go ahead. We'll wrap things up here, guys. This is a great look back at WrestleMania 30 in the weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very memorable show. A great show for them to have be the first Mania on the network and to launch the new era of the company. And we'll be here a year later from now. Scott's still going with episode 403, looking at WrestleMania 31, hopefully.
That's right, out in Silicon. Yes.
So we'll be back Wednesday night. We'll be checking out WrestleMania 18. That should be a lot of fun. Scott, we both have watched that recently now. We took some notes and a lot to talk about on that show. A lot of big moments as we move through 02. Which is going to be a very interesting year for many, many reasons.
Yes,
as
I
we
agree.
Move through it. Next week we have very special Monday episode. We're going to be reviewing 325-02 Raw, which was
the draft,
the inaugural draft. We'll do that Monday night. We'll talk about that and all the kind of changes heading out of WrestleMania. We'll get into split. I guess we'll touch a little bit on the name change, which doesn't quite come yet, but we'll get into that there probably. And all the things, and we'll decide how we want to track the draft moving forward. But the week after that, I'm sorry, and then next Wednesday we have episode 7, the Kevin Kelly Show and the main event. The week after that we'll have Backlash 02, and then that Wednesday we'll see what's up. So for Aaron George, sir, we want to thank you for joining us. Had a great time chatting with you once again.
I'm sure thanks,
you can
guys.
Catch him on a main event episode soon, I'm sure.
Thank you, Aaron.
And for Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We'll be back Wednesday night. We're going to finish off this WrestleMania mania, talking about WrestleMania 18 from Toronto. So until then, everyone take care and enjoy the rest of this Raw, which will be over by the time you listen to this. But I hope you enjoy the rest of it, and we'll talk to you Wednesday. Take care.
I think the biggest shock was the number of wings on the table last night.
Yes, we had the whole world in our hands. And
hundreds of chickens died for your feast.
Yeah, it was worth it.
Damn straight.
I think they would even agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Bonehead makes a fine enough wing that even the chickens are on board with what happens.
Think of the children, boys. Think of the children.
Rooster, think of the war pigs.
Well, meet me, Jesus, meet me. Meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in my load. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.